Now, In Depth with Francis Rose.
Thanks very much for listening on Friday, October 18th, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour, or 4 o'clock hour, I'm so used to this, saying that we do the Federal News Countdown now and the 4 o'clock hour on Fridays, and we count down the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by two experts in the world of the federal government. This week, it is the president and founder of Topside Consulting, Bob Woods, on the countdown today. It's great to see you, as always, my friend.
Great to be here, as always.
And Frank Reeder, Man About Town, is the title that I'll affix to you today.
I'm
very happy to see you. And you're pinch hitting because I screwed up my schedule and had you on it when you were supposed to be here next week, but you posted anyway. So you get a lot of points for that today.
Good. And I expect to cash them in, but always a pleasure.
And I will be happy for you to cash them in. We start where we always start, gentlemen, and that is with number three, the third most important federal news story of the week. And we'll start with you, Bob. Your story is from the New York Times. The headline is Ireland's government says it will curb a tax strategy that faced U.S. scrutiny. Why is this important for the federal government this week, Bob?
I think it's one of those areas where we've not maximized our impact in this area. The basic issue here is companies locating offshore. They do that to avoid taxes because our corporate taxes are significantly higher than the countries they're locating in. And for quite some time, those countries have been happy to have that money. Ireland is now going back and rethinking this, that maybe this is not all that good for them. What happens, in effect, is a company puts the money offshore, locates offshore, and in effect pays a lower corporate income tax. It takes that money out of circulation, if you will. And we're right now facing a time when we've got the highest amount of cash on hand in corporate coffers we've ever had. And once these things, this money is offshore, it stays there. It has to be spent there, or when brought back to the U.S., they then have to pay the delta in corporate tax. I think it's a big deal in the federal market because I think it's an area when we're looking for revenue, which has been part of our shutdown issue here lately. We've not gotten the maximum revenue out of this. And at some point, I think this is one of those opportunity areas between the Hill and the president and the White House where they could do some good, in which there's not any particular constituency involved that the two have taken sides on.
As this pertains to the federal market, Bob, I wonder if we could see some restructuring with some of the tax reform that Max Baucus is talking about today. Bloomberg government says that Baucus is aiming to get the top corporate tax rate down into what he says the high 20s is the range that he's using, down from 35%. And I wonder if that might lead to some restructuring, not dramatic changes in the landscape of the federal contracting base, but some companies that are primarily based overseas that do a lot of business here or have U.S. subsidiaries or affiliates or whatever. Do you think that would change the way the layout looks
well? I think it takes some pressure off because one of the things the federal government could do in the contracting area is they could decide not to contract with the companies that locate offshore to avoid tax. Or they could do the opposite. They could give points for those that are located here. And in either case, it would shift some of the balance, and it would create a lot of turmoil in our market. And I think the thing to do is to take the opportunity while you've got it. Don't be forced into it. And Ireland's corporate tax, by the way, is about 12%, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get the point. If you could lower your tax rate to a third of what it is now, you'd be awfully tempted.
Bob Woods' third most important federal news story of the week is from the New York Times. The headline is Ireland's government says it'll curb a tax strategy that faced U.S. scrutiny. Frank Reeder, your third most important story is from Fox News. The headline is Obamacare sign-up numbers begin to emerge, show slow start amid website problems. And there are some folks that say they saw this coming, and that's not the point of this conversation. The point is, in my view at least, we've seen another rollout of another federal government IT program that administrations of both parties have had trouble rolling out programs like. Healthcare.gov has been difficult. There have been problems with it. It's not the first, nor will it probably be the last, federal IT project that's bumpy from the very beginning.
Yeah. Well, my hope here is that on that issue we can have a a dispassionate conversation about why that occurred. At the moment, we still have lynch mobs running around wanting to take programs
more
and
fun.
Our people. Yeah, it's certainly more dramatic, makes for better television. The larger question here, of course, is, you know, what is the take-up rate? And the one thing that all of the stories I've read so far, not just Fox News, is I don't have a context here. And what we need to be looking for, and I hope somebody is looking at, is what the normal profile is for programs of this sort. I mean, it's not surprising to me that we see a significant disparity between the number of people who visit, the number of people who register, and a similar disparity or between the number of people who register and the number of people who actually enroll. And apparently there's a fourth cut, which is actually you can enroll, but the question is when you make your first payment, then you're in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the numbers are, for many of us, discouragingly low, but the hope is that two things will occur. One is that turns around, but equally importantly, to your point, once again, federal IT community has taken a bit of a bruise, perhaps to pursue that metaphor, a bit of a black eye.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we can learn from this. Maybe we can use this as a learning experience because it is such high visibility.
The very high visibility of this is really what's creating part of the problem, it seems, too. It's not just the information technology itself. The high profile of this is generating people to go to the site and see. I mean, we've seen news accounts of the reporters trying to log in and sign up for accounts and all of that too. And it strikes me that that attention then makes the volume higher, which the White House says is part of the problem. And then we're kind of chasing our tails, it seems.
Yeah, it's on the one hand, that may explain it again, without a deeper understanding than I have of what has occurred. I think it's reasonable. It would have been reasonable to expect that phenomenon, and the numbers we're seeing suggest that the volume is several times what the website was engineered to handle, and arguably that would be under engineering.
The third most important federal news story of the week from Frank Reeder is Fox News' account of the healthcare.gov website. Obamacare sign-up numbers begin to emerge, show slow start amid website problems. And I'm not going to give away where we're going on the countdown, but we'll hear more about this as we continue on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Frank Reeder and Bob Woods choosing the stories on the Federal News Countdown this week, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Here's Rear Admiral Robert Day, CIO, U.S. Coast Guard, on the Federal Executive Forum on Data Center Consolidation, sponsored by Dell Software.
As an operator on the front lines, I need a new capability. I'm basically going to be able to go to an enterprise catalog and say, I need this, I need it now, and I only need it for these 10 days. And literally, it's going to be no different than me going on to the Internet now saying, I want a Google Plus account, I want this much storage in the cloud, and those types of capabilities.
To listen to the whole program, made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to FederalNewsRadio.com. Consolidate, modernize, transform, and manage your agency's IT infrastructure more easily with data center and cloud management solutions from Dell Software. You can find the right Dell Software solutions for physical, virtual, and cloud environments, application and service management, migration and automation through DLT solutions. Discover how these data center and cloud management solutions can help your agency meet its mission and objectives. Visit DLT.com/Dell Software. That's DLT.com/Dell Software.
Ask the CIO is brought to you by Learning Tree International. Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government.
Eugene Spafford is a professor of computer science at Purdue University in Indiana.
There was the attitude that only the U.S. Internet mattered, and there's still some of that present in government thinking, and that's going to have to change because it isn't only the U.S. There is no obvious national border on the Internet.
Listen to Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Get empowered with the IT skills you need to improve performance and help your agency achieve its goals. LearningTree is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government, and they're on GSA IT 70 and MOBIS 874. 24 schedules, which means all levels of the government and qualified contractors get the best tuition savings possible. Save even more with LearningTree's 50% off select IT and management courses each week. For 50% tuition savings, go to learningtree.com/CIO. That's learningtree.com/CIO.
Google scans every single picture that you upload to Google+. What it does, it learns what your family members look like. It groups photos of your family members together. It can tell if your subjects are smiling. So if you've got a subject smiling in three photos, and one photo they've got their eyes closed and are frowning, it will take the face from a good photo and paste it into the bad photo so everybody's smiling.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
The 2013-14 Navy basketball season is right around the corner, and season tickets are on sale now. Join head coach Ed DeCellis and the men's team and head coach Stephanie Pepper and the reigning Patriot League champion women's team as they take the court in Alumni Hall all season long. Season tickets start as low as $80 for adults and $45 for youth and seniors. Bring the whole family and be there for the excitement of Division I college basketball right in your backyard. Call 800-US-4-NAVY or visit NavySports.com to get your tickets today.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. We are up to on this week's Federal News Countdown.
Number 2.
The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Bob Woods, is from GCN, and it follows on, Frank, to your number 3 story. Your story, number 2, Bob, is headlined 4 Takeaways from Healthcare.gov Launch. And you said during the break that GCN's take on this is more technical than some of the analyses that we've seen. I think you're dead on with that. But of these 4 takeaways, load testing, functional design, validation logic, user experience, which of these were the worst, or are they all, is this just pretty serious all the way around, do you think?
Well, the answer is they all have to be dealt with. My question would be, where else did they compare their situation? There are other big transaction-based systems in the federal government. There are big transaction-based systems in state governments. The state of Virginia, when they brought up the sex offender file, if you remember that, were brought to their knees because in the first week, the demand surged beyond anything they ever anticipated. Well, that happens. The problem gets to be of these 4 things that GCN lays out, we don't know which is most important because we don't know what they did, and we don't know if they went to other similar situations, because that's what's important. You don't have to invent everything yourself. You learn a lot by going across the street and watching the guy that's making donuts on that side and see how they do it and decide, are we really prepared for this situation? I don't believe they did that. I don't believe that they got into those kind of details. And so while I agree with the 4 elements of GCN, and there may be a couple of others that they should have dealt with, I'm not convinced you get into this kind of problem if you've gone out and done your market research, if you will.
Mm-hmm. What Bob is talking about from the technical perspective, Frank, is exactly what you alluded to in your conversation about the numbers, the sign-up numbers, and the whole thing is compared to what? A context and some kind of a measuring block, and that does look like it kind of eluded HHS in this case.
Yeah, I mean, what Bob said, and I think he's spot on, is you benchmark these things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, while the nature of the problem they were trying to solve is slightly different, if you break down the elements, it's a big transaction processing system, it's a big website, and so there's lots to be learned. We figured out a long time ago that you can benchmark and learn a great deal. I like the donut shop example.
Well, that's just because you like donut shops.
Person. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's what that's all about.
And
as we all do.
Again, working from almost perfect ignorance, which hasn't slowed me down in the past.
It's never stopped you before.
I question whether they could have done whether they did the kind of work that Bob described, but mm-hmm. It's one of several questions that needs to be addressed.
The main thing that I see coming out of this, too, as far as being able to do a postmortem and figure out where to go next, is that because it is what it is so heavily politically charged that I can't imagine how you go back and do an objective deconstruction of it to figure out where to go forward.
Francis, the timing is terrible. It's one thing if you come back and say, okay, we need to enhance our spreadsheet here and add on a few more columns. This is a lot more critical than that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take something as extreme as the air traffic system, which I hung around with for 15 years, and you'll find that those things do require the benchmarking. They do require the testing. It is tedious work. It takes time. And for this thing to slip and fall during this stretch of time, during the shutdown, was absolutely terrible timing. So a little bit of it's bad luck, but you make your luck. And they didn't do much to avoid that.
One element of this that I've only seen covered very, very slightly is the front end, and the problems with the front end of this have been pretty well documented, I think. But
yes,
there's a back end element too, that this front end has to tie to a lot of legacy systems that have been around for God only knows how long. And that's where it seems to me we have the potential for these problems to stick around. You can get the front end done very well, but this is integrating with databases in, I think, 6 or 8 agencies, something like that. All of them, you know, feeding the data in different formats and all of that. And it's what is making people start to wonder whether this is going to be a viable product when and if that can happen. I mean, it gets to the whole issue that we were talking about during the break of the cloud and how data is stored and recalled and all of that, Frank, it seems to me.
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of being too cute by half, the good news is that the problem at the front end does give some space at the back end because they're not experiencing the loads that they might otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts, either of you, about where this winds up, you know, a year from now? I mean, are we looking at something that is made workable at that point? Despite the political pressures, can we get some kind of a deconstruction in a reasonable period of time and figure out how to fix it?
You're going to have to get a workable system, as unattractive as it may be.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things you end up with in these mission-oriented systems. The instructive part of the last 2.5 weeks, it has been that we have different interest groups. We have stovepiped interest, and that's what this is about. It's multiple agencies. It's hard to go across those. They report to different committees. They have different budget structures. They have different capabilities. So when you go to do this, you're not in control of everything, and you don't even know where some of the critical factors are. So in that way, I have sympathy. But a year from now, they're going to have to have some things working, and they're going to have to do some shortcuts they don't like, and they're going to have to be fixing them for the next 5 years.
Bob Woods' second most important federal news story of the week is from GCN. 4 takeaways from the launch of healthcare.gov. Frank, your second most important story of the week is headlined "Cyber Defenders in Short Supply as Hacking Wars Escalate." It's from NBC News. This gets right to the heart of your what makes you passionate. This is really at the core of your being right now. And it really gets to the issue of the cyber workforce and the people that are available to be the good guys as the bad guys get a lot better at what they're doing. And it seems like there's more of them than ever.
I mean, again, this is in one sense old news. There are no great surprises in this story, an attempt at least to begin to quantify. There's a distinction here that I think is in fact missing from this story that I think it's important to focus on, namely that we don't need 500,000 of these people. We don't even need 100,000 of these people. We need, for most entities outside of national security and infrastructure can live with lower levels of technical skills. So the key here is while NSA and DOD and the utilities and the financial services sector need high-end specialists, we don't need that level of expertise if we're running, shall we say, less sensitive enterprises. And there's and so the focus, I think, of this story is that in those highly sensitive areas, we're experiencing a shortage. There are some numbers in here that I find at one little level a little bit concerning regarding what we think we need to pay these folks. My view is that NSA and other agencies will, notwithstanding other stories about them, continue to be able to attract the kind of talent that they need because the nature of what they do is so important to us.
One of the quotes here from former White House Director for Cybersecurity, Chris Finan, says they will choose, talking about the cybersecurity pros, where they work based on salary, lifestyle, and the lack of an interfering bureaucracy, and that makes it particularly hard to get them into government. Bob, that sounds like a perfect descriptor of what I read about millennials in any line of work, not yes. just cybersecurity. So I wonder if this is more generational or as much generational as it is technical and skill set.
I think it is generational, but I also believe, Francis, that it's interesting. If you come into the federal bureaucracy and you don't understand it, it's no fun. And that's what they're talking about. That's the stage these groups are in. You can either wait for that to change, or you can teach them how it works.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of the second approach, because I believe that doing the political and bureaucratic analysis part of this, the very course that Steve Kelman used to teach at Harvard and I was a student in, actually teaches you to appreciate how it works. And I believe they like games. They like these intricate processes. Why not make that part of it?
Mm-hmm.
Why not teach them how the political part works? There might even be some demand for this on the Hill, because I'm convinced that there's quite a few people up there that don't understand it themselves,
mm-hmm.
and they're part of it. So I think that's how you do it. You don't try to send them off to a sterile environment. You don't try to find a happy farm to keep them on. You teach them the world they're in and how to appreciate it and how to make it part of the game.
The element of what you were describing earlier about what this world looks like now, Frank, is encouraging to me, because you and I have been talking about this issue for a long time, and it sounds like people are finally approaching the workforce and how they build the workforce from the same risk management approach that you've been advocating for actual defense of the data and networks. Am I on to that?
Do I have it there? That's the good news part of this story, that we're actually and we have been. I would date it back to a Panetta speech 18 months ago. We're actually beginning to have adult conversations,
mm-hmm.
And understanding across the range of things we can do about cybersecurity. And obviously the people part of it is important, but it's not the only element. We're beginning to have adult conversations. I want to jump on what Bob said, because I think it's important. I'm in violent agreement that to some degree making public service attractive involves recognizing that the rule-driven, highly structured approach that he and I grew up in may not work to attract people. So the system itself has to adjust to the labor market. But in the final analysis, we have a responsibility to help people understand how to cope with that portion of working for any large organization can be done, and how they can be successful.
Frank's second most important federal news story of the week is from NBC News. The headline is Cyber Defenders Are in Short Supply as Hacking Wars Escalate, and it's a Reuters story. You can find a link to all of the stories that both Frank Reeder and Bob Woods have chosen on this week's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. And when we come back, the most important federal news stories of the week on the Federal News Countdown. Back in a moment.
Now your National Cybersecurity Awareness Month update, brought to you by BAE Systems. The SOL framework outlines next steps forward by the international community in cyberspace. The guidelines are a result of a two-day conference in South Korea attended by officials and IT experts from 90 countries. Conference organizers hope the framework will be used and expanded on by global governing bodies when dealing with issues in cyberspace. This National Cybersecurity Awareness Month update brought to you by BAE Systems on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
At BAE Systems, our pride and dedication show in everything we do. From innovative electronic systems to intelligence analysis and cyber operations, from combat vehicles and weapons to the maintenance and modernization of ships, aircraft, and critical infrastructure. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day. So we'll be there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
Here's Chase Garwood, acting CIO, Small Business Administration, Continuous Monitoring, Tools and Techniques for Trustworthy Government IT Panel, sponsored by Tripwire.
Where do I listen to, you know, operational and mission perspective versus security perspective, and where do we make those choices based upon risk? The second part of that is, do I have the skill sets, do I have the tools on an operational or an engineering perspective to tackle that issue?
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Agencies are under immense pressure to implement continuous monitoring to improve their cybersecurity performance. Tripwire understands cyber threats and vulnerabilities, federal initiatives, and compliance standards. That's why agencies using Tripwire's foundational security controls typically achieve over 80% risk reduction in under 6 quarters. Leading federal agencies and nearly half of the Fortune 500 depend on Tripwire. Find out why at tripwire.com.
The Guiding You Home Safely Report, provided and paid for by the National Air Traffic Controllers Association.
Up against a deadline, Congress passed and sent President Barack Obama legislation to avoid a threatened national default and end the 16-day partial government shutdown. The Senate voted first, a bipartisan 81-18, clearing the way for a final 285-144 vote in the Republican-controlled House. The legislation permits the Treasury to borrow normally through February 7th or perhaps a month longer and fund the government through January 15th.
Hi, I'm Trish Gilbert, Executive Vice President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. We are proud to represent the safety professionals who put the safety of your flight first, every day, every shift. We have the safest, most efficient, and complex airspace in the world. But unstable funding and partisan politics threaten to put us behind the rest of the world and damage our economy. Tell Congress air travel is important to you and you expect them to provide our national airspace system with reliable funding. For more, see us at natca.org.
General Dynamics Information Technology Health IT Services and Solutions. Improving health outcomes through the power of IT. General Dynamics IT. GDIT.com/health.
Now for your Federal News Radio DoD report, brought to you by BAE Systems. Afternoons at 37 minutes past the hour. Members of the TRICARE health plan can return extra prescription drugs at some military installations next Saturday. On October 26th, the Defense Department will participate at the National Prescription Drug Take Back Day. Collection sites will be open between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. on bases around the country. Tune in for your DoD report brought to you by BAE Systems. Afternoons at 37 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Frank Reeder and Bob Woods, and we are up to
number one.
And no great shocker, given the week that we've had for the past week in Washington, but both of you have chosen stories that revolve around the federal shutdown. I do think it is interesting, though, that each of you has chosen something with a little bit of a different angle. Bob, your most important story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is "Shutdown Deal Averts Catastrophe But Leaves Economy in Peril," and you look at kind of the economic implications of it.
Yes.
This story spoke to me as I thought about the impact that it's had on the contracting community and will for the foreseeable future. Frank, your most important story of the week is headlined "At the Department of Education, Diving Back into Routines and Making Up for Lost Time," and it's a Post story also, but about the other side of it, about what people are up against inside the executive branch buildings when they come back to 16 days of nothing happening, in essence. Before we dig into each of the individual pieces of these stories, I want to start by asking each of you to talk about any potential opportunity that has come out of the shutdown? Anything that you can think of that you can grab onto and say, this stunk, but this one good thing might come out of it. I'll start with you, Frank.
Well, and in fact, that's the reason I selected the story, because it wasn't necessarily about the negative side.
Mm-hmm.
But I see an analog to what happened the last time we had a long-term shutdown, 95-96, namely that at some level there's an appreciation in the political system that what the federal government does matters, and that the people who do it matter. And, you know, whether it's Arne Duncan greeting folks and calling them, whether it's the statement that the president made yesterday saying, I appreciate those of you who had to stay home as well as those of you who were accepted from the shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is important. You are valued. And at the risk of sounding like a Pollyanna, because obviously 18 years out, we have the same situation we had in 95, I hope for at least a brief time some of the dreadful rhetoric around not just what government does, but the people who do it has been tempered somewhat. And so in looking for a silver lining, that's the silver lining I see.
What about you, Bob? Do you see a silver lining here? Is there something good that we can take away from this?
Yes, I think the basic point that Frank makes, I agree with, which is what we do matters in the federal establishment. But what this article is more attuned to is the consequences to the outside world. What happens if the job's not done to the general economy, to the everyday person, and so forth? And that those consequences are there. But it also brings up the larger question that when you decide to use this political tactic, are you prepared for the consequence? Are you prepared for the reaction? Are you prepared to go back to your district and explain to them what's going on? It drew into this debate the rest of society. This would have been an inside the beltway debate had it not been for the consequences that came out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you notice, for example, that the Chamber of Commerce is now unhappy with this whole process, and they've not been a friend of the administration. I don't think that's any secret or that I'm coming up with any revelation, but they see the consequences, and that consequence is exactly in their wheelhouse, exactly what they have to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this article that in the Post struck me as, are you prepared for the consequences?
Frank, in your story that you chose, the Lindsay Layton story about the Department of Education, one of the things that I appreciated about it was that it highlighted the idea that I've talked about on this program for the last 3 weeks or longer, that a government shutdown is not just ending it, is not just a matter of going in and starting your day like you would have 16 days ago. It's a big deal. And Secretary Hale's news conference at the Pentagon capped that. He put the number at $600 million that they wasted because of the government shutdown. And I wonder, I'm hopeful, but I wonder if that kind of information will sink in as far as anybody's willingness to go back to this same route come January 15th.
Well, here I suspect that the willingness, or perhaps I hope the unwillingness of the political system to use the threat of shutdown or default on the debt is probably more likely to be driven by these external economic consequences than by the particular effects on government spending. I mean, I've seen various numbers. I think the number that was bandied about yesterday was $24 billion in total economic effect,
mm-hmm.
of which only a couple of billion was in direct federal spending. So in that sense, as our old late colleague Doc Cook used to say, that's decimal dust.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that in the larger scheme of things, in a multi-trillion-dollar federal budget, is not a large number. It might be for you or me.
It's a pretty good number for me.
I'm not sure that in and of itself is going to be a deterrent. I just hope the conversation moves away from using, shall we say, nuclear options to advance narrow purposes. I mean, there's a legitimate conversation that, needs to be had on a continuing basis on the value of any federal program, whether it's the Affordable Care Act or any other federal program. This isn't the manner in which we want to have that conversation.
One of the things that I found in talking to people at agencies this week, Bob, is both before and after they were starting to come back, is something that your piece gets right to the thick of, and that is we don't have any reason, speaking on behalf of them, we don't have any reason to believe that we won't be back in the same situation in January, because the track record indicates that if the drop-dead day is January 15th, we'll know what our future is at about 10 o'clock at night on January 14th. And is that any way to run a railroad? And, of course, I can't find any human that thinks that it is.
Well, I think that's true. I think we get back to stuff as basic as the communications between the branches of government. That's not been taking place. If you get back to one of my old agencies and the whole overreaction to the conferencing, you going to conferences. Well, if you get to thinking about it for quite some time now, these people don't see each other eyeball to eyeball. The people in the executive branch are getting their information through one set of sources or many sources. The Hill's getting theirs through other sources, and they're not communicating, and they're not sitting down and going into the details. The devil's in the details on these things. And when you get into it, nobody wants to serve the public poorly, I don't think. But they're willing to blow up the mechanism because they haven't been able to influence it or understand it. And I think between the understanding and the inability to influence the bureaucracy and the mechanisms that deliver that service is what's causing this. I don't think they're doing it out of informed knowledge of how the delivery system works.
Both Frank Reeder and Bob Woods selected government shutdown stories as their most important federal news stories of the week, and we will continue this conversation when we come back on this week's Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Carbon Touch Ultrabook, inspired by Intel, the world's lightest 14-inch notebook with Intel Core i7 processor and robust security, assembled in America. Learn more at WTOP.com/ultrabook.
Can't make it to every Wizards game this season? Wizards partial plans are on sale now. Purchase a 5, 13, or 21-game plan starting at just $17 per game. Select your own games. Call 202-661-5050 or visit WashingtonWizards.com today.
Calling all government, military, and defense industry executives, the Association of the United States Army invites you to its 59th annual meeting and expo.
October 21st through the 23rd at the D.C. Convention Center, AUSA's annual meeting is one of the largest land warfare forums in the world.
Companies will gather to display the latest defense technology, and forums will be held for soldiers, family, government defense civilians, and industry executives.
Admission is free, limited to qualified persons. For details, visit AUSAannualmeeting.org.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
I'm Stacy Redman, President and CEO of Strategy and Management Services, or SAMS. SAMS is an SBA 8A business that provides a broad range of strategy, management, and IT-related services to federal government agencies and commercial clients. Since 2011, we've gone from 4 employees to 80 employees. This growth would not have been possible without Insperity. Insperity gives us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
You don't want to miss the Caps in action. Single game tickets are going fast. The Caps have a full month of October, including exciting games against the Rangers, Blue Jackets, and more. Go to WashingtonCaps.com or call 800-745-3000 to buy your tickets today. Do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Here are some tips for a fun-filled weekend with Marvin Bond, editor of Recreation News. What classic fall events are coming up?
The Loudoun County Farm Tour weekend, October 19th and 20th. It's great for the farms and animals and wine and fresh produce. The next big event up is the Apple Harvest Festival in Martinsburg, West Virginia. That takes place October 17th to 20th, and you'll find everything apple plus a parade and plenty of other events for the family. Oyster lovers should go to the St. Mary's Oyster Festival in Southern Maryland at least once during your lifetime, because it also includes the National Oyster Chucking Championship. The winner goes to Ireland for the World Championship and the Oyster Cook-Off. It's October 19th and 20th at the St. Mary's County Fairgrounds, Southern Maryland. The big Maryland Home and Garden Show is at the State Fairgrounds north of Baltimore, October 18th and 20th. You can find out more at recreationnews.com.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Beth Reardon.
Recent and pending legislation, federal budget cuts, strategic sourcing, human capital, and the relationship between government and industry will be discussed at NCMA's upcoming 32nd Annual Government Contract Management Symposium, November 18th and 19th in Washington, D.C. Hear from the Honorable Charles F. Bolden, Jr., NASA Administrator, as well as Kenneth Asbury, President and Chief Executive Officer of CACI, in addition to three leading expert panels. Learn more about this training event at ncmahq.org/WFED.
Some stories are best told through pictures. Check out our Fed Photos of the Day gallery for a different perspective on the federal community. Find it on our homepage, federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Frank Reeder and by Bob Woods. And gentlemen, each of you obviously have chosen stories around the shutdown and the reopening of the federal government this week. Bob, yours is a shutdown deal averts catastrophe but leaves economy in peril from the Washington Post. And Frank, yours is at Department of Energy diving back into routines and making up for lost time. Also a Washington Post story. And what each of these stories reminded me of, and combined with the story that my colleague Jared Serbu filed that's on federalnewsradio.com about the $600 million wasted at the Pentagon, in, at least in Bob Hale's estimation, is there's a difference, and I've emphasized this the last couple of days, between back to work and back to normal. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if... I wonder, first of all, if we can expect to get back to normal, or if this is going to change the way that people look at the way they do their jobs, or the way that they see the mission of their agencies, or the way they think about the precariousness or lack thereof of their employment, or any of that. And if that's not something that we worry about or we're concerned about, then what's a timeline where we can expect that most federal employees will look back and say, yeah, it was an ugly scene, but we're past it now and we're back on to bigger and better things. Is there a way to quantify that, do you think, Frank?
Yeah, I certainly don't know how to quantify it. I mean, certainly, and this is very individual, there are some who will be scarred, although my sense is that the federal employee has been so battered over the last 5 to 10 years that this may not have as dire an effect, this particular event, as the accumulated small wounds that have been visited on them, you know, in the form of pay freezes and, equally importantly, political rhetoric that devalues what they do.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of that is, and this is the positive side, one, I think the political rhetoric over the last week has been much stronger. You know, Bob's example, the chamber actually says, gee, what the federal government does matters, mm-hmm. and it's not just about default on the debt. What federal employees do is important, and they are good, decent people doing important work. Again, we don't agree with everything, but that's a legitimate political conversation.
Bob, the idea of that legitimate political conversation seems to me it's just the core of what's going to fix this. And
yes,
I wonder if there's anything that any extraneous, any outside forces can do to continue to encourage that. I saw a news conference the other morning with the four budget committee leaders,
yes,
Patty Murray and Jeff Sessions on the Senate side, and Paul Ryan and Chris Van Hollen on the House side.
Yes.
And it was somebody like somebody flipped a light switch, a completely different dialogue, a completely different tone, different words used toward each other than I'd ever seen before. How do we keep that momentum, do you think? Is there anything anybody else can do, or is it really just up to the group of people on Capitol Hill to do it?
I've always preached that leadership is one of those hard-to-define qualities that when you have it, things work, and you tend to think, yeah, we got it. It's there. It's the grease in the wheels, but it's not big deal day-to-day. But when you don't have it, and you're out of grease, and the wheel's falling off, it becomes something a lot more apparent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these groups have figured out that there's not been a whole lot of leadership from the leaders. And I think the question is going to be, are they going to step up at some point and say, okay, maybe I'm not the leader in the Senate, or maybe I'm not the leader in the House, or maybe I'm not as important as I want to be. And given what the incumbent is going through, maybe I don't want to be in that. I'm going to make an impact, and I think there needs to be some of that. And I think the rhetoric needs to be toned down, and I think they need to get on with some things, and they need to accomplish some things. My point about these tax rates overseas, there's something that looks to me like if the leadership can't get together on something like that, what can they get together on?
Mm-hmm.
This has got fewer political impediments. It makes much more sense logically. You can just do it. So get on with it. It would bring somebody like the chamber into it. So it needs some understanding. It needs some leadership.
We just have a few minutes left, and both of you gentlemen have very long, distinguished careers inside the executive branch. And I wonder if you would just talk about what you would be trying to emphasize among your team in the next month, to 3 months, we'll take it to January 15th, to get people focused back on the mission and to get them to try to stay on the mission and get engaged. Frank, I'll start with you.
If I may, Senator, ask for a clarification of the question.
Well,
you're talking about the team inside the executive.
Yeah, the folks who are really doing it on an ongoing basis every day and who have felt a little shell-shocked and are now trying to get back into the scheme, the swing of things.
Well, I mean, one of the things that the reason I picked the Arne Duncan story, the education story, is it starts, I think, with showing them genuine love. I mean, it starts with saying what I think we believe, which is namely we value you, we value the work that you do. And it isn't a whole lot more complicated than that. That isn't a guarantee that there won't be people out taking shots at us. But in the final analysis, one element of leadership is showing genuinely respect for the people with whom you work and the work that they do.
During the shutdown, this story says, Duncan called a couple of dozen furloughed employees just to see how they were faring. One was Jocelyn Logan Friend, who was at home in Cheverly in Prince George's County. I didn't recognize the number, so I didn't answer, she said. When she listened to the voicemail later, she was surprised. It was just a very kind gesture. Bob, what would you be trying to do in your role, either at one of the agencies or at FAS or whatever?
Well, I was at a number of different agencies, and I would say the thing I found to be in common is they all believe in the mission. Sometimes we refer to it behind the scenes as we're in it for the glory. We're in it for the mission. We're in it for the whatever the program is. And I think you have to stay focused on that, and you have to talk about the things that we're doing right, and you have to show the kind of interest that Frank's talking about. And you've got to show that you're still interested in their future, and that that level of trust, hopefully, that you've built up is renewed and is continued. But leadership's an everyday job, and it's a team sport. You're not the single leader, And that value is what keeps them there.
Mm-hmm.
The money's important. People have bills. People have things that they aspire to. But what's more important is the mission and what gets done and whether they are a valuable piece of that team.
The most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Frank Reeder and Bob Woods, both have to do with the shutdown and the reopening of government. Frank's number one story on the countdown is the Washington Post story at Department of Education, diving back into routines and making up for lost time. And Bob's number one is from the Washington Post. Also, the headline is shutdown deal averts catastrophe but leaves economy in peril. With just a minute left, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being a virtual guarantee that we'll have another shutdown showdown down in January, and 10 being absolutely no chance of that happening, Frank, what do you think the odds are? Where would you be on that scale that will be in the same spot in January 15? 3.5. Could you be more precise, please? 3.5. And Bob, what do you think?
Oh, remember, I had an engineering background, so I did.
I see you have your protractor out as you're trying to come up with your number.
My pocket protector. I'd say a 7. I don't think it's going to happen. Because I think there'll be some people try,
mm-hmm.
and there'll be some ideologues who believe that it's still a drum to beat, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Gentlemen, I thank both of you very much for being on the Federal News Countdown, especially Frank, who was a last-minute addition due to my scheduling snafu. It's great to see both of you, as always, and I thank you very much for being here. The Federal News Countdown every Friday in the 4 o'clock hour, featuring the three most important federal news stories of the week. This week, selected by Bob Woods and Frank Reeder, and you can find their selections and hear this program archived later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The next hour of In Depth with Francis Rose coming up on Federal News Radio.